Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, good Thursday morning. Glad you are with us here. They are actually doing a White House press briefing right now, which is something they've started doing this week. I don't know if this is permanent. When Annie Fry was reporting from up there, she said they were doing it certainly this week, which was marking the 100 days of the presidency so far. And it wasn't clear if they were going to continue, if they'd move these to mornings forever. I don't know the answer to that, but we'll have to see if we can dip into that here at some point when they get a chance. It looks like Stephen Miller is going to be talking this morning, and that would always be worth getting a little bit of if we could do that. By the way, welcome in. I'm Mark. That is Kim St. Ange. Ethan Bright in the studio with us this morning. Matthew Rocchio helping us out on the phones. And I tell you, we do read social media. We're on Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, X, and we do follow what's being said on there. And I have to address something here. when we go to a commercial during the social media feed, if you follow us live on X or Facebook or wherever you are, we have started putting up what's called a slate. During when the commercials are running, there's a slate up there that says "We'll be right back." Right, it's just like a filler that fills the screen and takes us off camera for just a moment. And we've had some complaints about that. Several people don't like the fact that we throw that up there. They'd prefer us to be on camera. Well, I just got to be honest here. The problem is that when we get in commercial breaks, Kim goes on some rants and we're afraid people are going to read her lips. And we kind of had to start blocking that out.
When can Mark pick his nose if you don't put that up during
commercial? You do feel like you're in a fishbowl sometimes.
Yeah, like I'm in a window of a store. I mean, we're on camera for 4 hours straight. And if Mark wants to pick his nose,
I don't know that's what's going on here, Kim. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, that's why we started throwing that up there, you know, so that if you need to pick your teeth or whatever it is you need to do while you're in a commercial break, you can do that. Sorry to disappoint all of our people.
You're missing quality content during the commercial break.
Exactly. Yeah. Hardly. Coming up, speaking of quality content, we're going to get to our friend Shannon Bream from Fox News Sunday and see what she's working on. And, you know, the president brought up something interesting yesterday during his cabinet speech when he, you know, basically suggested that there were ways that he could avoid dealing with these mid-district court judges trying to control the immigration policy of the United States. And that is that's something that's only been done like 3 times in the history of the country. And it's something that he said he didn't want to have to do here. And I'm anxious to get her opinion on that from a legal perspective as to whether or not you could do the lift a habeas corpus and institute some of these things anyway, if there's a threat to the United States. Marco Rubio yesterday, when asked about it, said, well, I won't respond to that because these judges have no authority over the immigration policy of the United States. So it's going to be an interesting face-off there, and we've got Shannon coming up here shortly. Griff Jenkins at the bottom of the hour that we will get to. Right now, let's get to our top stories, Ethan, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
I think we're going to have a great relationship. He called me up yesterday. He said, let's make a deal. You know what I mean? But no, I spoke to him yesterday. Couldn't have been nicer.
That's the president talking about the brand new Prime Minister of Canada, who I don't know if it was doctored or not. There's a picture of him flipping off America on the cover of a magazine, and he made some comments the other day that America has disappointed us and we can't depend on our partner anymore. And yet, according to the president, he's already called begging for a deal and is about to travel to Washington, D.C. This is the power of the art of negotiation here.
But I also was on the ticket, quite honestly, you know, because I could code talk to white guys watching football fixing their truck, doing that I could put them at ease. I was the permission structure to say, look, you can do this and vote for this.
If you look to Tim Walz as an example of somebody you'd want to hang out with and watch a football game, turn in your man card and turn out the lights as you leave, please.
Well, I think I will be a great unifier. That's what I want to be, and it's very important to me. We had 11,888 murderers. Many of these people killed more than one person. More than 50% of them killed more than one person. We got to get them out of their country. I don't know if that's unity or disunity.
That was the president last night on Newsmax, on that town hall, where he was basically describing what's going on with this immigration policy and why you need to get some of these people out of the country. And I think a really good question is, if there was no due process or legal processing when 20 million came in, what's the urgency to do that as some of them go back out?
Banding together in the face of the greatest man-made economic crisis in modern presidential history.
All right, marking myself safe for the past 100 days from not having to listen to that voice like nails on a chalkboard. Cammy made her debut again last night, 100 days out after her the president's term and a few months after her major butt whipping last November. By the way, Stephen Miller is speaking. He's the deputy chief of staff for policy for Donald Trump. He's at the press briefing room right now. Let's take some of that live,
National
Ethan, please.
Security and intelligence agencies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
We're hiring individuals, not on their ability to carry a weapon, not on their ability to keep Americans safe, not on their ability to conduct sensitive intelligence operations, but based upon race and sex. And obviously, that is unacceptable. It's going to be merit-based across the whole federal government. But this wasn't just the federal government. This was the private sector, and this was also, of course, our entire university and education system. So President Trump's Department of Justice, working with other departments and agencies, have made clear that this administration is going to fully enforce Title VI, Title VII, and Title IX of our federal civil rights code. Discrimination based on race and sex is prohibited by law, and this administration will vigorously enforce that. And companies, small or large, that violate plain text of federal statutes will face appropriate financial and other penalties. This administration is not going to let our society devolve into communist woke DEI strangulation.
Stephen Miller is a national treasure. Can I just tell you that he's able to articulate these policies in a way that makes so much sense? Because when you think about what he just said,
What is there to be against there? We're enforcing anti-discrimination policies. We're not going to operate government agencies based on the sex or color of your skin. Isn't that the goal? Hasn't that been the goal since the civil rights movement?
Isn't it just crazy, though, how a lot of people, the liberals, think it's the opposite, that it's discrimination if you yes. don't have those policies in place? Like, you know, you think about this whole idea of you know, not having meritocracy and just basing it off the color of your skin or whether you're a man or a woman, and that's why you would get the job. And it's like you think about, you know, you take like the NBA. And if you were to sit here and say, well, we can only have 50% black people, or we can only have 30% black people on the team, and we have to make sure we get enough Asians and enough white people and enough the NBA would not be as fun to watch, because they're not as talented of players, because you're picking people based on their skin color versus how good they actually are. And when you tell someone who has that mindset, like a Kamala Harris, who believes, you know, CRT and DEI and all this nonsense, it makes them think like, okay, well, yeah, I wouldn't like that. That's not fair. Okay, well, yeah. That's not fair. Just like nothing else is fair to do it.
Yeah. Remember, white men can't jump. So short white men like me cannot jump. We would not. That would not be entertaining in the NBA for sure. All right, quick break here. We're going to get to Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday. We'll get her take on the habeas corpus argument that was made yesterday in the president's cabinet meeting. We'll be back here in just a minute.
President, as you know, do you have any advice for Stephen A. You know, if he launches the run?
No, Stephen A. He's a good guy. He's a smart guy. I love watching him. He's got great entertainment skills, which is very important. People watch him. You know, a lot of these Democrats I watch, I say they have no chance. I've been pretty good at picking people and picking candidates, and I will tell you, I'd love to see him run.
All right, there you go.
There's only one Shannon.
Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday. All right, Shannon, you never know what you're going to hear out of Donald Trump's mouth. I would not have had that on my bingo card during that town hall last night.
I mean, you don't know. And he's been surprising. He never, you know, fails to surprise. And sometimes when you think something is bubbling, you're starting to hear something, you're like, yeah, that can't be true. And then he says it and you're like, okay, that's what we're doing now.
Yeah, no kidding. Stephen A. Smith, he's endorsed him for president for the Democrats. Maybe that's because he knows he's a long shot. I don't know. Hey, welcome in. You know, a couple serious legal questions for you here, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The situation yesterday in the cabinet meeting where the president suggested he had some options to ignore these judges' rulings on immigration or detainees, including lifting the writ of habeas corpus. He mentioned that other presidents had done something. I'm assuming that's what he's referring to.
Well, yeah, sometimes I'm not really sure. And it seems like even within the administration, sometimes people are not exactly sure where he's going with these things. They have done a number of things that they knew would immediately go to court. And they are wanting to upend the, you know, traditional order as we know it. Now, how many of these very serious, critical legal questions end up at the Supreme Court? I do think of them, regardless of who appointed them, you know, how they got to the bench. They very seriously steward and care about being kind of the final judicial voice and voice of reason in this country. So even though we have all of these novel theories being floated and cases flying around, I do think when it comes to the end of the day, when these things end up at the Supreme Court on the merits, they will be very measured in how they handle some of these propositions, mm-hmm. I think you could say. Yeah.
Along that same line, that Columbia student, the anti-Israel, you know, protester who had been detained by ICE, a federal judge ends up saying, oh, you got to free this guy. So could Pam Bondi step in? I mean, where's her place in all of this? Or would it have to go through the Supreme Court? Help me understand the kind of the way that whole thing is working.
Well, with a lot of these deportation cases, there are multiple tracks that are going. So there are challenges to the immigration rulings and the status on that. There are challenges to them being detained, just simply them being held in custody. There are also separate challenges dealing with the First Amendment and whether this is about their speech rights. So you have multiple legal prongs going with many of these deportation cases that will all play out separately. So maybe somebody is freed now, But then there is a renewal of the deportation case that doesn't have to do with them just being held in custody at this moment. And then there are those constitutional challenges that are in the federal courts on their speech issues and free speech rights. So, goodness, there are so many different ways that this can go. But the DOJ does have a lot of say. Immigration and those immigration appeals are housed within DOJ. It's not a traditional judicial structure. It's more in the executive branch. So that means to me that the attorney general is going to have a lot of power when it comes to the deportation side of all of those legal different tracks.
Mm-hmm. We are. I just thought about this because our legislative session is about to end here in Missouri. But we are what, about 5-6 weeks away from the end of the Supreme Court session,
yes.
Right? What mm-hmm. big cases are you still looking for out of there this year?
Well, goodness, we have several. Think about the fact that we've got this case out of Tennessee that everybody is watching that has to deal with whether you can, as a state, ban certain treatments that have to do with gender transition for mm-hmm. minors, for people that are underage. That Scrimeti case is a really big one. There's also this case out of Texas where, you know, where they're saying that you have to put in your age to access certain pornography online. And there was this crazy argument at the Supreme Court about, well, that's going to take away people's privacy rights if they have to put in identifying information versus how do you protect kids from really hardcore porn that's available everywhere online. So there are a lot of things, but really what we're waiting for are, you know, cases that the court hasn't solved yet that have to do with the Trump administration. May 15th, they're going to hear about arguments on the birthright citizenship executive order. But it's not really going to be about the merits. I think we've talked about this. It's really going to be more about whether a single district judge, there are 600 to 700 of them at any time, can put a nationwide injunction on any one policy. So there are a lot of big things that are still in the pipeline that we got to wait for to hear from the court.
Wow. Including, and maybe this ends up getting challenged, this judge in Wisconsin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dugan, who has now been suspended by the Supreme Court up there.
Yeah, and goodness, they didn't rush to get to that.
I mean,
she is facing federal charges, and the Wisconsin Supreme Court, I believe she's still, you know, being paid on some type of administrative leave. But if you're somebody who is saying, and the allegation is that she's not complying with federal law, that you're going to harbor or hide, the accusation is, or spirit away somebody who is under, you know, federal deportation or detention orders, it begs the question for a lot of people how somebody who is supposed to be the trier, not the trier effect, but the enforcer of the law mm-hmm. is going to be somebody who doesn't want to seem to comply with it. You can disagree with the law. Okay, you can advocate for it to be changed. You can't simply ignore it.
You're supposed to be impartial, and that's my gripe, is that a lot of these mm-hmm. judges are just not.
Yeah, I mean, that is the deal. If you're a judge, you're supposed to be the referee. Remember, Chief Justice saying calling balls and strikes, that's what it's supposed to be about. You can hate a law, but you can still have to enforce it. And I think of the late Justice Scalia, who said, if you always agree with your own decisions and never have to do something that's at odds with your own personal beliefs, you may be not a good judge, because you're going to have to enforce things you don't agree with if the law is valid and on the books at times.
Yeah, that's a good point. Shannon, do you have a guest lineup for this weekend?
You know what? We are working on a couple of GOP members who are in the middle of this, getting this big, beautiful bill done. Jason Smith and Jody Arrington, who chair two different committees, they kind of represent the fact that the GOP is not yet on one page, and they've agreed to come on and talk about this,
wow.
their own internal disputes. So, you know, we are working on our Democrats to give us balance as well, and somebody from the White House should be joining us, too.
We'll see you on Sunday, Shannon. Thank you.
See you then.
All right. See you then. Appreciate that. Shannon Bream, you can listen to Fox News Sundays right here on 97.1 at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoons. Coming up, where in the world is Griff Jenkins? We'll find out.
Where in the world is
Griff Jenkins?
Watch your back.
All right, Griff, did you recognize that fight song?
I did indeed, and I am standing right now as we speak on the hallowed campus of the University of Alabama, Roll Tide. And I got to tell you, Mark, as a graduate, proud graduate of the University of Mississippi, Ole Miss, with a daughter that graduated from Georgia, I'm not sure how I feel about it, but I'm glad I'm here. Because, look, it's going to be a historic day. You've got President Trump making a commencement speech here. He's never spoken at Alabama, or let alone another SEC school, in all of his time as president. And you've also got Nick Saban, the legendary coach, introducing Trump tonight. And so it's going to be interesting to see who gets the louder applause, whether it's the president or the former coach.
Yeah, that's going to be fun to watch. You know, he sure as hell not going to speak at Harvard. So what choice did he have?
Yeah, listen, yeah, I mean, you remember when he came to the Georgia game, Alabama-Georgia game,
yep.
which unfortunately the Dogs lost, but he got a raucous applause. And then the other night when President Trump was speaking at that rally, he said he's looking forward to this speech. He's expecting the largest crowd they've ever seen. We're actually right now at the Coleman Coliseum. You know, press has got to come in much earlier to get all set up. We're here now, but students are fired up, although maybe one of the more interesting moments is going to be later today. We're told that former Congressman Beto O'Rourke will be here leading a protest this afternoon called The Tide Against Trump.
Oh, my gosh.
How much success they're going to get. But, I mean, look, Kim, Trump won the state by 65%. This is Trump country. And he is going to – it's going to be electrifying, I think, when he gets here. And most of these students are quite excited. I interviewed yesterday John Wall, who's the Alabama – GOP state rep, and he had a good point. He's like, look, I understand the protests and all that stuff, but really, if you think about it, having a sitting president, regardless of what party you're in, is quite an honor for your commencement speaker.
So this is inside, right? Like, what's security like there on the campus?
Oh, as you can imagine, it's already, I mean, here we are at 8:30 in the morning, and there is a massive security presence. That's why we're having to come in so early. I mean, he's not speaking until 7 p.m. local, and we're having to be here this early to get set in. So there will be a strong security presence here, but they're going to line people up, and you know, the students and some of their parents, a very, very tough ticket to get, perhaps as hard as a ticket to get to a football championship to hear the president speak here tonight.
I got a nephew that goes to school there. I texted him. He's only a junior. I texted him, asked if he was going tonight, and he said no. But yet, I was thinking about, I got to go to a football game there to visit my nephews a couple years ago. And, I mean, it's a madhouse. I'm a little surprised Trump didn't try to get him to move it to the football arena.
Well, you know, that's a good question. I'm not sure exactly why they didn't try and do that, and you certainly would have been able to fill that. It has been on and off raining here.
Oh.
So I don't know whether they knew about that. Hopefully the skies will clear, because I want to get, you know, talk to some of these students lining up later today when they come. But, I'm not sure why it's in the stadium, the Coleman Coliseum. But one thing's for sure, it's going to be jam-packed.
You know, Griff, there's been a lot of focus on, obviously, immigration and who should be deported and who shouldn't, and if judges should have a say. And yesterday, Kim, noticed that you had been retweeting some of Bill Malusian's reporting on some of the people that they're finding now and some of their criminal backgrounds and how long they've been in the country illegally and had deportation orders.
Yeah, listen, this story, and you know, sometimes I've gotten them, and Bill puts a lot of them out too. This story is really the daily drip by drip that we're learning who these people are. And this record number of like 65,000 deportations that the White House put out is important to note. These aren't deportations of people that crossed the border and then were deported. These are criminals, because remember, from the very beginning, Tom Homan said, we know who the bad guys are, and we're going to go get them, because the Biden administration didn't. So these people have long been identified, and this is 65,000 interior illegal migrants that were here and have been arrested with previous convictions or wanted, and they're literally getting them and sending them back. And, you know, it's really, you're going to continue to see this, I think, really for months and probably for the duration of this administration, because there are so many here. And what's crazy too, and we've talked about this before, what's crazy too is that the Democrats have really doubled down and gotten on the hill that they want to die on in trying to fight a lot of these deportations. And that is not going to be a winning message, I would propose to you, come midterms, because certainly by the time we get around to midterms, they're still going to be going out, because there's only a certain number of ICE people, right? Like, if you've literally got, as we know they do, 100,000-plus cases of criminal migrants, here's an address, let's go get them, there's only so many ICE agents in law enforcement, you know, teams that can go and get them. And so I think the American people aren't changing. Even in those poll numbers, you saw maybe from Fox News, and the president has slipped in some, even though he's attacking the polls, he's slipped in some of the polling, but he hasn't slipped on immigration. And that's an outlier that I think really tells you sort of where the country still is, which is 100% behind him cracking down on this border. They like what he's doing, and they don't want him to stop, and there's obviously no indication he's going to.
Griff, if you were here, I'd give you a fist bump. And speaking of fists, what's your take on what is tattooed on the fist of Abrego Garcia? Because the president got into it with an ABC News reporter about that the other day. They were claiming it's been photoshopped. And then I heard CNN arguing that it's a matter of interpretation, that they admit there's a tattoo on the guy's knuckles, but there's a question of how you interpret that tattoo. Is it what's your take on this?
Yeah, yeah. Here we are back to the Bill Clinton battle of semantics. What's the meaning of the word is. Look, at the end of the day, there are the tattoos on gang members is the signature thing they look for. And, you know, sometimes MS-13 makes it easier because they have the big MS-13 tattooed across their neck. You're like, okay, got it.
Yeah.
Other times, it's less. And Tren de Aragua, for example, doesn't have a signature. They just have a number of tattoos like AK-47, trains, because Tren de Aragua is trained from Aragua. They like the Michael Jordan Jumpman tattoo. And so they've built, you know, law enforcement has built databases of tattoos over the years that indicate, you know, their associations. And so, you know, I haven't seen it in person, and I don't profile gang members, but, you know, it's not that there isn't something there. Something's there. I suppose interpretation is up to law enforcement.
I haven't been a gang member for quite some time. I got out of my gang a number of years ago. But maybe this is a silly question, but I get it's this whole thing of like, okay, you're part of us now, and so you have to get this tattoo. Almost, it seems like an initiation thing, but it also seems idiotic to me because it would just tip off law enforcement, hey, heads up, I'm part of the TDA gang. Oh, I'm part of the MS-13 gang. Wouldn't you want to do something that's a little bit more incognito?
I don't think they care.
I guess not.
Yeah. I mean, I think Mark's right. I mean, I think they wear their colors like a badge of honor.
Yep.
And I think, you know, as we talked about this before. Look, you know, you're joking, Kim. You got out of your gang, whatever. But if you are tattooed, you don't get out of the gang.
No,
that's
and if
true.
You are tattooed and you're out of the gang, then
you're
they're going to come looking for you. ICE is the least of your problem.
Probably true.
Particularly,
it's a good point.
Because it's a criminal organization. Like, this isn't a club. This isn't the, you know, science club at school. This is a criminal organization, a gang. And so anybody that is tatted up that says they're no longer in it, well, guess what? That's a threat to their existence.
Well,
and they handle it very violently usually.
Griff, have fun in beautiful Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and go Roll Tide, huh?
It's Roll Tide. It's going to be quite a feast. Looking forward to it. You can catch it on Fox tonight, guys.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thanks. See you.
You bet. Yeah, Griff Jenkins there live down in beautiful Tuscaloosa.
That's a long day. So they had to get there before, it sounds like, 8 a.m. Doesn't even start speaking till 7. I don't know how long ago, but Trump's not known to be brief. And so, I mean, I guess Griff's going to basically be standing on that campus, hopefully with a chair, from like 7 a.m. until what? Like 10 o'clock at night?
Yeah, he starts his reports for Fox at 11 a.m. Central this morning. They'll start going to him live on the campus to file reports throughout the day. And the president doesn't speak until like 7 o'clock tonight.
Yeah. Start speaking.
Start speaking. That's when his speech is scheduled to start, is at 7 o'clock Eastern tonight, 6 o'clock Central, if you're trying to watch it on any coverage they might have. All right, quick break. We're going to be back. Some good news for the Second Amendment, it sounds like, out of the Attorney General's office. We'll cover that when we come back.
I was one of the few people who always advocated, and I was attacked for this, but always advocated for him to show, not tell. So for every bad moment he has, he should be out there 25 times more, right? To show, not tell. Now, what they did here, I mean, like, look, they punish reporters.
That is a guy named Michael LaRosa, former Biden staffer, who's now speaking out because he says that he was one of the people on the inside of the Biden administration lobbying for them to be more forthright about Biden's situation. or to at least counter it more than they were, right? Instead of just being in defensive mode all the time, that if he had a bad outing, they needed to make sure, put him in a situation where he could succeed pretty quickly after that so they could counter the argument that he was declining rapidly. So this guy used to be a pretty regular guest on CNN and some of the other outlets after he left the administration, and he claims that the Biden White House blackballed him by telling them if they continued to have him on, they'd get no access to the White House at all. Listen.
They threaten access. I was booked 45 times in 2023 on CNN, and the White House pressured CNN not to ever have me on again after the turn of the year. And I've experienced this stuff now.
Just to be clear, you used to work for Jill Biden. After you left the White House, you were a regular on CNN. The mm-hmm. White House decided they didn't want you on television anymore. So they told CNN, basically, don't put this guy on anymore.
Yeah, and they threatened CNN with access. And
yeah, so that's interesting. They weren't just colluding with big tech. They were colluding with the mainstream media not to have certain guests on because they might reveal something that they didn't want revealed.
That's what was so crazy about the Biden administration is how much was kept secret and just the secrecy and the way they hid Joe Biden, because that was the only way that they could control the narrative was to not let him go out and take questions.
I said it in 2020, the story of this administration will be, what did they know and when did they know mm-hmm. it? Because they deceived the entire country and suckered people into voting for this guy, and he was pretty much clueless from the beginning of all of it. He was not the one with the auto pen, that's for sure. By the way, the Colorado State Shooting Association has sent a letter to Pam Bondi urging an investigation by the Department of Justice into Colorado's gun laws. Now, she famously created a Second Amendment Enforcement Task Force to look at violations across the country, and they're concerned with what's going on there with the governor in the state of Colorado, Governor Jared Polis, who's got imposed several restrictions they believe interferes with the right to keep and bear arms. So this is a great thing. I mean, I'm glad they're doing it. Maybe if we don't get a Supreme Court decision quickly enough regarding this AR ban in Illinois, maybe the task force can take a look at that, because to me it's an egregious violation of your right to keep and bear arms in the state of Illinois. So that's more good news for sure. All right, that's going to do it for us today. We've been trying to cover everything. I told you the breaking news off Fox earlier is that Peter Ducey's dad is apparently stepping away from Fox in a full-time role. He'll still be doing some reporting for them, maybe a couple days a week, but apparently he's going to take more time off to spend with his family and his grandkids and all that good stuff.
Good. Just had a second grandbaby.
Yep. Congratulations to him. He's had a long career up there at Fox. All right. Stay tuned. I'm sure Brian Kilmeade will be talking about that during his show this morning. That's coming up here at the top of the hour. Annie Fry and Mark Reardon after that. We'll see you back Friday morning at 5.